right to the edge of this. Maybe I will never quit. Right, cause you're feeling it. Flash it, flash it, flash it.
Hello, and welcome to the first Lost.101 podcast, supported by our race partners Albion and Ride With GPS. Lost.101 is the first cycling ultra race entirely organised for Flinter riders. Flinter being an originally German acronym standing for Frauen, which encompasses both cis and trans women, lesbian, intersex, non-binary, trans and agender. Aiming to provide a new entry point into ultra-distance cycling, the 101 has seen 150 riders of a wide range of backgrounds and experience levels sign up to take on its 1,200-kilometre challenge. Starting at the historic final stop on the Camino route, Santiago de Compostela, riders will set off on their own two-wheeled racing pilgrimage to Cordoba, heading into the imposing Sil Canyon and passing through control points at the old mountainside villages of Bragancia, Linares and Guadalupe, where the stunning Gothic monastery of Santa Maria may offer a moment of peace for road-weary riders. Onward then to the finish at Cordoba, with riders needing to cycle 200 kilometres per day to make the finishing party on day 6. In this episode, we're going to hear from the Lost team about why the 101 was conceived and why it feels so vital in the competitive cycling landscape in 2026, and also from riders who are going to be taking on the route about their journey preparing for the race. My name is Nick Rawlings, and as a non-binary producer and cyclist myself, I was super excited when I was approached to produce this podcast for the 101. And in the spirit of doing things a little differently, we'll be including spatial field recordings from the road and including binaural sound elements and music in these podcasts. It's our hope that by producing this podcast with immersive sound, we can also reflect the really immersive experience that undertaking an ultra and cycling through the night, making the road your home, really is. So here's Lost.media manager Taylor Doyle, who sat down with race organisers Andrew and Hannah to talk about why we're launching Lost.101.
Okay, so do one of you want to take on sort of like the history of the Lost.101 and how it came to be?
Yeah, sure. I guess the place to start with this is with the 100 TCR Women campaign. So back in 2024, back in early 2024, I think, was when we first had the idea to start a campaign to increase Flinter representation in our races. So we've always really wanted to encourage more women, non-binary and trans riders to take part. So yeah, we launched this campaign to increase Flinter participation in the TCR, in TCR number 11 last year. And that campaign was really successful. We managed to double participation from Flinter riders. And we just saw the effect that encouraging more people to take part had by being more active about it, by talking to them directly, by providing more education in the run-up to a race as well to make it more accessible and to give a sense of community to those riders by giving them a platform to do that through our WhatsApp group.
I think putting a number on it was a big part of it as well. It really inspired people to sort of become part of a movement and really affect change in one big leap that year. So it was actually your idea, Taylor, to put that 100 number on it.
Yeah, I'm here pretending to ask questions, but actually I'm like, this was, yeah, something that I felt bring to life. And I think that, yeah, as you said, putting a number on it was the thing that, if it's like, oh, if this year there's going to be a bunch of people like me in the race, then that's the year that I'm going to do it. And I think that, yeah, between us, our worry was that maybe it would be like a one-shot year, but actually what we've seen is that the year after, it's we're hitting that same threshold-ish again. And it wasn't just a one-time special campaign. It was a thing that actually helped people to feel empowered to apply and try it. And it's exciting.
And I think the power of that number as well is that you know that there's going to be more people like you taking part. I think that's a huge part of it, because when you take on an event where you feel like a minority, it's a lot more intimidating. And just knowing that there are going to be more people like you makes it exciting and more welcoming.
And so the 101 is a natural continuation of that 100. And there's also, there's a night I remember, Taylor, after TBR number four, where you and I were having dinner with Fiona Kolbinger, amongst other people. And we'd sort of played about a little bit with the idea of a women's race before, I think. But then we said to her, or conversation went that way, about how to get more women ultra cycling. And Fiona was like, need a race just for women, trans and non-binary riders. And at least in my mind, it suddenly clicked at that point. That was an important thing for us to do.
And initially it was something that we'd thought about the idea, but we were like, oh, is it going to take off? Are there enough women and non-binary and trans riders in the scene to make it a success? And I think initially we were like, wouldn't it be cool if we had 101 riders at the start line? And now we're looking at having about 150 on the start line. So yeah, it's already been a success and we haven't been to the start line yet. So I think hopefully next year, maybe we'll have 200 on the start line. And we're hoping as well that this acts as more of a springboard to longer races like the Transcontinental or Trans-Pyrenees.
I wondered if you guys could talk about also that beginner focus piece that goes alongside a race that is only for women, trans and non-binary people.
Probably a place to start with that is by talking about the makeup of the field of the 101. And we know that roughly half of riders haven't raced before. Which is pretty high. And I know that Hannah particularly has done a lot of work in the last year creating, as you say, WhatsApp community and various different webinars and other sort of learning spaces for women and Flinter riders. All of that education work that you've been doing, particularly Hannah, I think has really built up and shown with the number of applicants we've had.
Yeah, one of the things about taking on a race like this is that it's not just your ability to ride the race route and to finish the race.
And all of these things are the skills that will give you the confidence to go back home to your everyday life and suddenly be more independent in your adventure planning, in your travel, just maybe even the way you apply for jobs that you thought you couldn't do before.
Yeah, well said, Andrew. I appreciate that a lot. And definitely it's the reason why I feel so passionate about getting other Flinter riders into the sport, because the transferable skills and confidence that shows up in other areas of your life is like constantly surprising and really valuable. I wonder if you guys as race organizers, because you guys have curated this route so lovingly, and I wonder if, like, in contrast to the TCR, for instance, if you could talk about like location and sort of like resupply and like maybe the shape of the route and decisions that were made that went into it that could be a bit more fitting for a race like the 101 and sort of all of those micro decisions that lead to a nice race experience for our riders.
Yeah, the idea of the race is to kind of create a mini TCR, which shows off the kind of routing decisions that you will have to take if you want to race the Transcontinental successfully. So that means it's a free route race with control points and parkour, and riders are responsible for routing between them. Now, we don't have any particularly challenging gravel or off-road in this route because we want it to feel accessible, and we know that that's a sort of a mental hurdle, a bit of a stumbling block for many of the riders that we want along at the race. We have gone for an area where we know it's particularly low traffic, so it's a very safe area in terms of vehicles, drivers for the race. We've got a beautiful route, which is sort of the first half of it. I kind of think about it being like almost an inverse of the normal race route, where we go straight to the mountains and we climb them. Whereas this route kind of goes straight to the huge river valleys of the Iberian Peninsula and descends them and then climbs back out instead of climbing the mountain and descending back down. And then towards the second half of the race, we start finding those mountain ranges and kind of reverting. Almost as if you put a dotted line across the middle of the race, you could fold it so that the mountains fitted into the valleys of the first half. It's kind of how I think about it. But it really is it's a stunning route that's super quiet, the kind of place that you'll find amazing gorges with vultures circling, vineyards on rocky hillsides, huge areas of woodland, miles and miles and miles that you might go without seeing a car. Quite limited resupply, given that it's in Western Europe. It will hopefully feel familiar and safe and welcoming to people, but at the same time, not to be underestimated. There are some big distances between accommodation and resupply. And then ultimately finishing in beautiful Cordoba, where I know you and Hannah spent some time scouting out finish locations.
Yeah, it's a nice finish. And the cutoff times are a bit more generous than usual for us, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Normally on TCR, you'd need to be doing about 250 kilometers a day to finish within the GC time cut. For this race, you need to be averaging just over 200K a day. So still a real challenge. And it is a hilly route with a lot of elevation. So it's not to be underestimated, but a little bit more generous than our other races. And we're hoping that makes it a bit more accessible and a bit more encouraging for people just dipping their toes into the scene.
One of the riders who's dipping their toes into the ultra scene for the first time is Fatima Islam from Bristol, who told Taylor about their story and their journey to the start line, which has had a few nasty curveballs for her to navigate. Fatima is also one of our four Mike Hall bursary riders who receive financial support from Lost Dot to take part in the race, in addition to equipment support and coaching. Here's Fatima.
What is your cycling background and how did you come to apply for the Lost Dot 101?
I used to work in a sort of running shop, which was attached to a cycling shop. And the guys there got me into cycling because they were like, you do so much running, come on, you know, like, let's get you into cycling. Nice. So I got my first bike through there. And then from there, I used to like doing sort of like adventure races and ultra running. And then I found out that you could do so many adventures through cycling. And I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. It opens up your world, you know, both travel and adventure and fitness, you know, all the things I love. And then I started cycling then. I started doing the North Coast 500. That was my first sort of big adventure. But it's like a day or two in and I got knocked off my bike by a car. Oh. And so that stopped things quite quickly. And then unfortunately after that, I was injured for years from that accident. And so I got back into cycling very slowly over the last sort of year or so. And then, yeah, just slowly got back into it. I've always seen transcontinental race as something that was like, you know, one day in the future, I'd love to do that. And then this race, Lost Dot 101, came up and I just thought, what amazing, amazing race. It's a month before my final exam. So I was really wary about doing it. But I just thought, you know what, I've done it. You know, I just thought, let's just do it. And now I'm just, you know, you have that panic of what have I done? But I'm just, my life right now revolves around sort of training, working and studying, basically.
Wow. Oh my gosh. What a journey you've been on. Do you have any expectations for the race for yourself? If not, what are you most looking forward to?
I think my goals for this race have just gone from one end of the spectrum to the other, I feel. At the beginning, when I first found out about it, I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I want to do my best, you know, do well, etc. However, unfortunately, as training's gone on, my knee hasn't always, the journey towards its recovery hasn't always been linear, unfortunately. And so I've had to really strip back any sort of expectations or like goals that I had. And now it's just one of completion, basically, just because my knee can become really sort of excruciatingly painful at times. And I, right now, I'm just hoping and praying that I can get to the end. Yeah, basically. I think that stripping everything back to right back to the basics of just your only goal is getting from A to B and not worrying about everyday life things that you have going on when you are, you know, back home. I just absolutely love that.
Taylor also spoke with Amrei Kuna, who's an experienced ultra rider, having first ridden as a bursary rider on the TCR in 2022. They told Taylor about their changing approach to competition and self-care while racing, and also why a flinter-focused race felt so important to them.
I wonder if you could walk people through your background in ultra cycling or cycling in general and a little bit about how you came to ride the TCR.
So I just started cycling, I think, typical as a COVID kid, and wanted to look for something that is happening outside. And with a good friend of mine, started cycling in the Black Forest, and we got our first secondhand road bikes and made our first long journeys. And I just realized that it's easy to ride. Well, not easy, but one can push to ride maybe 200K plus. So I got really into long distances. And then in 2025, I was thinking about applying. No, 2022, sorry. That was TCR. I thought about applying. I was doing a really boring job and it was winter. So I applied for TCR. And yeah, I was 25 years old. And I thought maybe being 25 is a good age to do such a crazy thing like TCR. So I signed up for it and yeah, I was happy to ride it. It was the biggest challenge in my life, I think, so far. And it changed some parts of my body a bit and my mind. So it was overall a really strong experience.
And you finished in a top 20 spot. You did very well.
Yeah, that was quite lucky. But the other part that made me finish so strong was that I didn't care about my body so well. So I got really into, I don't know, I slept so little and I didn't eat enough. I couldn't eat so well back then during the race and I didn't know about nutrition stuff. So it felt a bit like afterwards, it felt a bit like I was not prepared enough to be well to my body, to be good to my body. Yeah. So I kind of had to pay for my big placement, my good placement there. But nevertheless, yeah, it was... I don't regret to do it, so.
Well, you sound very wise when you're talking about it now and talking about, like damage maybe that you did to your body. How are you taking those lessons and moving forward now with a race like the 101 or riding that you're doing now? What changes are you making?
Well, first of all, I'm trying to ride not as competitively. So what helps for me is know the people that I race with, which is now with the 101, I don't know anyone really. Well, I know the names, I know what they've ridden, and I know that they're good, but I don't know them personally. So I hope to meet them before, so I know that these cool people also can be in front of me and that I'm not jealous of their seating or whatever. So that's one part. And yeah, I also think about what is competitiveness and why are we or why am I competitive? Yeah, I know from my character that I'm quite a competitive person. So I'm trying to adjust what is society making me being very competitive and what is myself just needing this to kind of be the character that I am. So that's one part. And then the other part is that I just want to be kind to my body now. I will try to eat enough. I will try to sleep enough. And then in the end, we will see if I succeed to listen to my body or if the competitiveness will override everything.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a really good place, actually, ahead of this race. I'm very much looking forward to watching your dot and your journey. What are you most looking forward to on the race for yourself?
I think, first of all, I'm really excited about the field, the flinter field, and I'm just excited to race in such a field. I'm very excited to race in the first edition of this race. I've waited for such an event for such a long time. So I'm very happy that now it's here, it's happening. Yeah. I also realized that in Germany here, sometimes when there are races for women only, the focus sometimes lies on having a nice time, just looking good, taking pictures. And I really like that here we have a really long distance, which is really hard to reach, at least when you're not really into ultra cycling or for such a long time. And that, as you say, we have this very broad field of first-time racers and competitive racers. And yeah, maybe shows other people who think that, quote, woman, quote, sports are just, they just have to be short, they have to be nice, nothing more. So I'm really happy that now there's a really strong Flinter race.
Accomplished ultra rider Nikki Shaw was one of our team's riders to watch for the front of the race. Nikki's coming back to racing after a bad hit and run on the Via race in 2024 that left her with a doubly broken leg. But recently, she's been showing really strong form again, with a fastest known time on the Royal Chiltern Way last autumn, as well as plenty of winter miles on her local Yorkshire roads. Nikki spoke to just how competitive the front of the field is going to be on the 101, with an impressive goal for their finishing time.
Are you carrying any expectations or goals for yourself for this race?
So I am just going to go and enjoy myself. And I think that's always the primary aim of any race. First of all, enjoyment, enjoy the journey, and also just aim to finish first and foremost. I think that's probably the same for a lot of people. There's no point going if it's not going to be an enjoyable, fulfilling experience. But then on top of that, I am quite a naturally quite an ambitious and competitive person. So I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't have like personal goals as well. Mm-hmm. So I'd say like I'd love to be able to do this in 3 days, but we'll have to see what happens.
Exciting. Yeah, thank you for sharing your plans with us and talking about being competitive, because I think with the 101, as much as it's been a really great place for beginners to sign up and try their first ultra, got 50% new racers on the ridership, which is like so exciting.
Definitely. I think having a place for breaking down those barriers and having a place for people to sign up without feeling intimidated, I think is a really special and unique thing. So because there's going to be more people to race against of kind of, normally we might have a pool of maybe 10 women non-binary riders in a race, but you're racing against everyone, so it's actually not an even playing field. But I think this is going to feel like a real encouragement for more women to get into racing and more Flinter riders to sign up to these kind of events.
Yeah, I'm so excited to watch it unfold. I know that you're a very experienced rider and you have a lot of wisdom to share. So I wonder if you had any advice for those first time racers who are on the 101, who are nervous and, full of doubt and all of those butterflies and things that happen pre-race. What would you say to them?
I think I would probably say try just to focus on your own race as much as possible. It can be very distracting. Just what everyone else is doing and what other people's plans are, and that might work for them, but it might not translate to your own experience level. So I would say just if you've got a plan in place, then try and stick to that as much as possible. And just enjoy the journey. And I think look after yourself as well. That goes both body and mind. If you're feeling low, then just listen to those feelings and stop if you need to. Usually it's just a case of needing something to eat. Just if you're feeling low and bad, just eat something, just stop and rest, take some time out, and things will pick up again. Because the journey is always like, it's just full of up and downs. And if you can trust in the fact that there's a down is going to be followed by an up, then you just have to ride that wave and just try and get yourself to the finish line on that basis.
Another of the riders that everyone in the team is super excited to have riding the 101 is Aisha McGowan, who is the first African-American woman to ride as a UCI World Tour Pro. Now based in Girona, Aisha's been shifting towards more long-distance riding and bikepacking recently, while also supporting many other women, and especially other women of colour, to get into cycling through their Abundance Project campaign. Taylor caught up with her as she prepared for the 101 and asked about how she was approaching the different challenge of riding ultras like the 101 versus her background in fast road racing.
Do you feel like maybe you could talk about the contrast between sort of like road racing and like that pace and mindset, and then maybe now enjoying the pace of ultra, which I always like to say that ultra is not fast, right? Like it's just plodding and consistency. It's not necessarily about like boom, boom, boom speed, right? In the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about that a lot, and I am going to do the whole thing on a road bike, which will make me want to go faster.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to remember to dial it back, especially on the climbs, like really just kind of get in a groove and climb up at a pace that does not feel like death. But I feel like the like flats, if there are any, I'm not convinced that there are any flats, but if there are any, then maybe push a little there because it's easier for me to do that. And then the downhills, I'm a pretty good descender, but with the loaded down bike, it makes it a bit more technical, a little trickier with balance and speed, but it's still going to be faster than going uphill. So I feel like I'm really excited about my setup, and I feel really confident and comfortable with my equipment.
Do you have any other sort of like personal goals for the race for yourself?
I mean, the main goal is to finish. I feel like I am confident, but at the same time, like I have not trained for this to the best of my ability, I'll put it that way. Yeah, so my goal really is to finish. I would love to do it in 5 days, because the less time I'm out there, the more, you know, the less like deterioration I can experience. And I just feel like for me, I'm the kind of person that more time on the bike is worse. Like, I'd rather do it a little faster and make it a little harder than there's a happy medium in there. Like there's a such thing as too fast and too hard, but then there's a such thing as like, I've just been out here for way too long. But yeah, I feel like I've been just like really having fun with like researching the equipment, researching the route, like figuring out like, okay, can I make it to a hotel, do I think? Or mm-hmm. is there somewhere that I can set up camp? And like lots of Reddit, reading. Yep. And especially as like a Black woman, I feel like there's some things I just can't get away with as easily. Like guerrilla camping is not something I think I'm gonna do unless I absolutely have to. I'm never gonna get in a bivvy. You're not gonna ever see me in one of those. And so just like coming up with alternatives to how folks have navigated this generally, or at least how I've seen that folks have navigated this generally, because I'm sure like there's so many things people do that we've never even heard about. But yeah, just figuring this out in a way that feels comfortable for me.
Safety is an element that's been a concern while building the 101 and its route for our Flinter riders. And it's also been a recurring theme in our conversations with riders while preparing for the 101, as we just heard from Aisha. One rider who really spoke to the realities of safety on the road and in racing is Em Wilson, another of our bursary riders, who's absolutely doing things their own way by riding the 101 on their Omnium cargo bike. So they'll definitely have enough space for snacks between resupply stops.
Well, I see when you say the cargo, you don't just mean carrying more stuff than usual.
Oh, no, I mean my cargo bike.
I miss this. That's amazing. You're doing the 101 on the cargo bike?
Yes, I am.
Wow. So what prompted you to start trying that?
I was actually asked by one of the organizers or photographers from the Via race if I would want to ride on a cargo bike, because I'm a bike messenger. And we were hosting a checkpoint, and he was a photographer at that ultra. And then he asked us, well, and also asked me if I want to, if I could imagine riding an ultra on a cargo bike. And I'd never done something like that before. So of course I said, yes, this sounds amazing. And the main idea behind it was also because not so many WTMB people ride ultras or are into cycling, and men often, like, the way they talk about something, it sounds like really tough and really hardcore and really wah. And I decided, well, if people or WTMB people see me riding an ultra on a cargo, well, then it can't be that hard. I know, I was hoping it would make it a bit more approachable, maybe.
Yeah, I get that. I love it. It's almost like a chill flex.
I mean, it's not chill at all. It's really
Yeah, I would love to know more about it. Like, you clearly, it hasn't put you off, right? You enjoy it. What do you enjoy about it?
I think the way it rides, it's a really nice feeling to ride a cargo. I really enjoy riding cargo bikes. It's like this, you sway, you get in this really nice flow. And when it's, you know, flat and you don't have headwind, then you can also, you know, get quite a speed. Yeah. Plus, also being a small person, saddlebags, handlebar bags, always touching your wheels, frame bags, no bottles, cargo bike.
Absolutely. Well, cargo bike aside, what is it about ultra specifically that you enjoy?
For me, I think it's the challenge. Pushing myself, because it's such a mental game. You're constantly thinking, okay, now I really don't feel like eating right now, but I have to eat. Or I know I'm too tired to do this right now, but no, I'm going to push on just a little bit more, just a little bit more. And it's incredible how our bodies can, you know, support us to ride such far distances with so much elevation and for such a long time. And you just get in this flow where you're just going and you see so much, and it's just, I don't know, I just get in this flow state and really enjoy it.
That's great. No, that's a great answer. I can relate. What are you most looking forward to on the Lost Art 101?
So there's one spot I saw where vultures live. I'm hoping to see a vulture. But that aside, also to ride with 150 WTMB people, that's absolutely amazing. Because we just have to look around in the world we live in at the moment, when, I know, victims of sexual assault or just general assault get stigmatized or bashed down, or, yeah. It's just not the safest world to live in if there are chat rooms with men discussing how they can violate women's bodies. So being in a space where it's just women, where I know no one's going to mansplain my bike to me, because it's happened to me so often before ultras that people will come and say, oh, but this is not good on your bike, or lift my bike, oh, but you've packed too heavy. And I know that won't happen. The communication between WTMB people is different just due to different socialization structures. It's going to be really cool.
Totally. I think it's going to feel really powerful and
really
exciting to be.
Oh, 150 women on the start line of all together.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I'm really excited for you. In terms of the logistics of racing and sort of like your personal journey with racing, what do you anticipate will be your biggest personal challenges during the race?
The first night, I think for many of us, I've never ridden through the night. I had one bad experience at Bihard where I was riding into the night, and then youngsters in a car followed me into a forest, and then they overtook me and, you know, slammed the brakes, and I turned around and cycled back the way I was coming from and hid.
Oh, wow.
So experiences like that, I'm like, oh, okay, but I'm, you know, shouldn't happen. And I'm going to sleep outside for the first time. So I'm going to bivvy on the first night, which is also going to be a challenge, which I'm also looking forward to.
Nice. And one more question for you, since you do have a good amount of experience doing races and no less on a cargo bike, I wonder what you'd say to any of the riders signed up for the 101 who are really nervous and who've never raced before. What would your advice be to them?
Well, you know how to ride a bicycle, and that's what it's about. It's just keep pedaling. If you think you can't anymore, just, you know, keep pedaling and know that most of us might also be struggling in the same moment or are also going to be nervous. And we don't have to, that's the other thing. We don't have to prove ourselves to anyone, especially I think when men are around, one kind of also sometimes has this internal feeling that one has to, you know, be strong and prove that one's not weak. And in a situation like this, we don't have to prove anything to anyone. And we're just riding our bikes and it's nice. And if we can't anymore, then take a quick break or think about the nice parts of the journey that we've been through.
Awesome. That's great advice. I'm going to leave it at that.
As the 101 is a different kind of race for Lost Dot, so's the way that we're going to be telling the story of the race this time around. We're trying out some new tech, new audience experiences, and we're also working with an all-Flinter media team. One of those team members is Aflin Cathcart-Keys, who will be filing written race reports from the road throughout the race. Taylor and I sat down with Aflin in Bristol a few weeks ago, and as you'll hear, they're really well placed to speak to experiences of both competition and challenge and growth on the road. Aflin runs the incredible initiative Role Models, a mentoring scheme based in Bristol, supporting Flinter riders to get into bikepacking and ultra cycling events, with over 100 signups this year. We spoke with Aflin about Role Models and also about the new ways of storytelling that we're trying out on the 101.
Like, how excited are you?
I'm really excited, kind of daunted by the prospect of following everyone around and capturing all the stories, but I think it's going to be absolutely amazing, but kind of naively don't know what to expect yet, which is really great.
Yeah. Have you done ultra distance racing yourself?
I've dabbled. I did the Highland Trail last year. I started the Highland Trail 550 last year, got 2 days in and then kind of got stormed out, and it was an absolutely amazing experience, which I'd love to try again once I've kind of let the storm dust settle a bit. So not this year, but maybe another year.
I've scratched from the HT 550 twice, so
we'll have to do it again one day together.
Yes. And okay.
Find a year when the sun's shining. And yeah.
So you run Role Models in Bristol, and I think for the first time this year, you're now having an ultra distance sort of cohort in that. Do you want to talk about like why you felt called to do that and what that's going to look like this year?
Yeah. So Role Models is a bikepacking mentorship scheme for women and marginalized genders, using bikepacking as a tool to kind of build confidence and community. And when we ran it last year, we had 50 people involved in the program, in kind of one-to-one mentorship. We saw a lot of people in their applications talking about how they wanted to get into ultra distance racing. And from my own experience, I had so many different people I could call on for support when it came to racing. And so we wanted to start a group specifically for people to get into ultras with lots of different mentors that they could call on. So I think we've got 6 mentees who will be working with 6 mentors, 3 of which are based in Bristol, 3 of which are based elsewhere, like yourself. And the idea was to give like a big breadth of people that the individuals who will be the mentees can call on to actually gain information to kind of like run ideas through and ask for support. And it's kind of like that no stupid questions space, because everyone does ultras in such different ways.
Amazing. Yeah.
So what does it mean to document and tell the story of this race for Flinter riders? How is it different from the way you might be doing the storytelling for another one of your races?
Yeah, I think the thing I'll start with in answering that is with the media team itself. With gender-wise, we have a diverse media team on the races, generally. But for the Lost Dot 101, we have an all Flinter media team, which we knew was going to be the case from the beginning, if at all possible. So that means You know, we have you doing our race reporting. We have another race reporter, Sophie, in the other car. The photographers on this race are all women or non-binary people, and we have also a videographer as well on this race, which we've not had a dedicated videographer like actually follow the race from start to finish. You know, making reels and you know, moving image updates of the race. So that's something to look forward to in the content output for the Lost Art 101. What I'm going to say about the media team that is all Flinta is that it's really important to put the people that you're trying to tell stories about very deliberately and with intention, to put those people in the roles of actually doing the storytelling and capturing and documentation is just going to ensure that everything's being told authentically and with sort of like lived experience of being a rider in those spaces. Like most people on the media team are also bike riders as well and in this space. So I'm really excited to see that come through in the storytelling, in the way that the Lost Out 101 feels to dot watchers and followers who are following along and hopefully being inspired to try it themselves one day as well.
I wanted to pose a slightly more fawny question, if that's okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, there will be people that look at projects like the 101 in cycling and really question why they're so necessary. And we've obviously explored like why they feel necessary from the inside. But what would you say to, you know, others that see a project like this and don't really understand why it's even necessary, that feel kind of like aggrieved?
I've had this question before from well-meaning cis men who want to know why the heck we're doing this, because quote unquote cycling is the most accessible sport out there, why do we need to mess with it? And I guess like when you're having that conversation, if you want it to go well, and if it's not too inflammatory to begin with, and there's actually a conversation there, then like you do need to sort of like put yourself in their shoes and be like, yeah, it is, you know, an accessible, amazing sport, you know, kind of. But yeah, it's hard to be able to eloquently and gently sort of say like, you just don't get it. Like, it's hard to be like, well, this is stuff that you've never felt before, and like, you don't know what it's like to walk into the cycling, your local cycling club, and not be the majority.
Hopefully this podcast and the race reporting will be the stories and the answers that those people can read and listen to understand that perspective. And you know, you may not have experienced it, and on paper this looks like something that they can't get involved in, but actually hearing from people directly involved in their motivations, how it feels to be out on the road in a space that's created specifically for them, will hopefully do some role in shifting hearts and minds.
Yeah. And I think also from an editing point of view, that's why I'm so interested in kind of focusing on the field recordings and sound that people are passing through. And we had a conversation about like doing an episode that's purely focused on nighttime riding, you know, so that once people are past kind of day one or two, we're really delving into that like sensory experience, because that is the allure of this for so many of us, and sound is so powerful for exploring that. Thanks for joining us on the Lost Dot 101 podcast. Tomorrow, we'll be in Santiago de Compostela, where our riders come together for the first time at registration and race briefing in the final hours before setting off on the 101. We'll see you then.